Can we push it twice?
No, just one.
There you go.
You're on.
It's bowing in circles. Everybody have what they need?
No, we're missing one more.
I could carry a short one.
No, carry it away.
Musical goblins.
Do you need two high, Richard?
No, he's been doing yoga.
Oh?
He doesn't need the two high.
Okay. He can melt it.
Yeah, very good.
Doesn't get high anymore.
Doesn't get high anymore.
Yeah, it's high anymore.
So we could start with a bow. So the back is the arrow and the arms are the bows. So our mindfulness is a bit sharp now, so we can offer that. And then open it out. It's very pleasant to be in your company. I appreciate having this place to come to. I live here in Longmont, but now I have somewhere else that I can come. And I lived here before. I lived here in 2002 for about a year. My name is Peter Aucott. Some of you probably know that, but and I started practicing in small centers. I live here, but I work for Boulder Shambhala Center. I work in the finance office, so that's a big office, and I worked there for a long time before with Trudy, and more recently some others like Faye, our new old friends. And others that I've just met and others that I remember seeing some of you in other contexts, but these serene small centers are like home to me. And when I first started to practice, it was in Salt Lake City in a little bookstore right off the University of Utah campus, and about the same size as this room, actually. So it feels very good. So that's what little talk I will give, and is on the subject of fresh start. The impulse to meditate, the inspiration to meditate, the desire to keep doing it. It's sometimes kind of hard to put your finger on it. And it is especially difficult when we're caught in what we might experience as a good deal of discomfort. It isn't always easy to stay with it, as would typically be the case with any of these subjects that we talk about. There are usually ways that we have of arranging the discussion, you know, the shape of it. And all of the practice that we do is designed for and intended to assist us in the mysterious process of whatever it is that makes us think we want to do this. The typical subjects of your talks, I couldn't know. I could guess at some of them, but I hope that I won't repeat things that seem old to you, because the intention here is to have it be fresh in all sorts of ways. This is the time of year when suddenly the energy has shifted away from all the color and light and festivity and sort of a magical kind of feeling around the solstice, and then the long stretch of winter begins to open out and it's time to get at it again. The posture is the ground of this situation, and there's a very simple way that we always have to settle down and begin to experience that inspiration that we might have to do something like this, to actually sit. And it's interesting to know that in coming here tonight that there are many groups that come and sit in this room, that there are several of which are Buddhist groups and have, I would expect, very similar sitting practice. Have any of you been part of those groups?
Mm-hmm.
And is that true, that,
yeah,
that the sitting practice is, what is different? What do they do that is different?
Well, I used to sit with a Thich Nhat Hanh group.
Uh-huh.
I'm trying to remember what was different.
They have different chants.
Yeah.
They walk so slowly.
They walk very slowly.
They eat very slowly.
They sit in a circle. Yeah.
Like this?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Everyone facing right. In?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And do they sit on cushions?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Or chairs.
And
your choice.
Do you recall what the instruction is?
It's very similar to the instruction for shamatha.
One of the main points of this seems to be that it is, although not entirely unique to humans, pretty much the case that amongst the species wandering around on this amazing place is that we can sit up straight. So that one of the keys to this is putting yourself in a position where you could do that. And for some of us, you know, our knees go in and out, so sometimes it's a chair, which has its own seductions along with its mm-hmm. support. But it seems to be important to have that firm structure. Tsakyong Mipam Rinpoche talks about the spine as if it were a stack of gold coins, so that if you tried to stack up a whole row of gold coins, you wouldn't have it too far off straight, but it could be a little bit off straight. And in fact, you might even give it a little bit of some of its heft, that you could feel the way that it would do that. And our spines are like that in his analogy, that they aren't perfectly straight because there's a curve in the lower back. And over time, a lot of us get curves that we wouldn't necessarily want to have. But those set of instructions that are part of the sitting practice is the basis for whatever freshness that we can start with. Because in some respects, what we are training ourselves to do is to be ready for anything. That the direct experience of nowness takes a lot of hard work sometimes to get to. It is hard even sometimes to sit upright on our own, much less be present for the anxieties and terrors and irritations of ordinary life.
Can I interrupt you just for a
moment? Please do.
I think we don't want
to. Here.
Thanks.
The view is another way of talking about the ground or the body, and we're taking the point of view that we have. It's where we are. It's whatever is happening and how we experience those moments that we happen to notice. And by putting ourselves in this posture and in this situation and in one another's company, for that matter, which is helps quite a bit in another way, just knowing that there are others nearby who are doing it gives a sense of support. It's then possible to proceed with the, what is sometimes called the path, which in one formulation is meditation, is the second one. In another formulation of these sets of three, and three is a convenient number because usually we can remember three things. And if not three, at least one. And if there are only three to start with, we sort of know where that one might be in relation to the other two, as opposed to longer lists where so it goes like that. But however we might wish to proceed, our expression is in that activity. That's why they talk about the path as the goal, because the directness of our breathing in this instance is our expression of to ourselves. We have that much that we can be present for and at ease with. Naming some of the other groups that practice here, there is also nearby in this area a teacher, Dzigar Khonchor Rinpoche, and he has used the phrase I've heard him say, that when distracted, return joyfully to the breath. That the simple fact that we have that next breath coming along is pretty wonderful, especially when it feels in short supply.
Thich Nhat Hanh has a famous breathing in, I calm my body, breathing out, I smile.
That's great.
That you repeat when you're...
What's the first part?
Breathing in, I calm my body, breathing out, I smile. So for people that can't just focus on the breath, he gives them those two phrases.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, might help one fall asleep. Would be a good, for a multi-purpose, waking up and falling asleep. So it's pretty good to get to sleep, too. That's pretty, sometimes that's in short supply. So that's what I've been thinking about, is how that the situation is set up for us, and of course thanks to the hard work and ingenuity of our friends here who and you who have this place, this is an expression of body and speech and mind and view and meditation and action as well. And we have that available to us at any given moment. If we take the moment of that we recognize that we're all tangled up, and rather than feeling fresh and open, we feel stale and closed, which comes pretty commonly. Usually there's some kind of residue of that that is our comment on it, you know, our dissatisfaction with our own situation might be one form, our complaint, our discomfort with the underlying anxiety might be another way that it has a further comment. But if we are upright and taking the posture well so that we're balanced and so that in this Mahāti lineage with our hands in this mudra, that we have an open front and a sturdy back and we're ready to do what we need to do. Pretty mysterious what that might be, but the term that I'm using for this short talk is fresh start, and it was one that I recall Trungpa Rinpoche using, and that we could, each of us, use the situation that we're in to start fresh regularly, so that if we notice that we're distracted, we are returning joyfully to the breath, that there is a feeling of beginning freshly each time we notice this. There is a freshness in the breath. Fresh connotes, you know, opening the window, letting in fresh air, the essence of the basic goodness of, you know, fresh fruits and vegetables. It's got all kinds of cheerful and crisp and good smells, good sounds. The warrior aspect of this lineage is to have it when we notice that we are distracted and come back to the breath, to let it go and let go completely and open out in that way. So that was my interest, not necessarily speaking to yours, so I wanted to talk a little bit about something that was on my mind, and I would be very eager to hear what might be on your mind, because that would be much fresher still. And well, Richard, is that your name, Richard?
Richard, yes. Hi. I can take a thought, and I can blow it up, and wow, what a good thing I did. And all of a sudden, it turns into a tragedy. And I think, oh, why did I ever do that? And then the next day, it disappears. It just did what it did. And it wasn't good and it wasn't bad. But by my own mind can make it really good or really bad. And that's not a good thing. Because I get, you know, so high with it that I think, wow, you know, if only the world could stay this way. And then when I look at the other side, it gets so bad that I think, oh, gee, why do I want to stay here? And then when I let it go, it dissolves. It wasn't really good or bad. And I need to take the middle path and not let the goodness make me feel so great, and not let the badness that I made it look so bad. If I would just let it go and see how it turns out, it seems to make life easier and more appreciative.
Yeah.
I think that's what you were...
Yeah.
referring to prior.
Yeah, there's a dreamlike quality. You know, it's like when you wake up in the morning, you remember what you were dreaming. And it was quite a construct. It was quite a big deal at the time.
Yeah.
And yet that's over now. And sometimes we don't quite want it to be over.
Yeah.
You know, we'd rather sort of, I'd like to stay here a while. But that's one of the reasons why the company of others helps, and the posture itself on one's own, because sooner or later we'll notice.
Yeah.
And then there's almost an effort that is given to following the breath. You know, it's a gentle effort, but it's precise, which is sort of extends the possibility of letting go slightly longer. Slightly longer. And slightly is good. It's more than it was.
I have an example of holding on to something. So I had, even just to say it, it's sort of like I'm bringing it back or something. But I played a Scrabble game where I think in one move I made like 63 points.
And that's so good.
Yeah, that's like really good. So I made my friend take a picture of it with his phone, and then I made him email it to me. And so I would, you know, when I was feeling kind of bummed out or whatever, I'd click on it, you know. And I'd like look at it and go, oh yeah, and then I'd put the F over there and the W, you know. And but I found that what happened over time was, that initial sort of high of like, boy, am I good, and look at how many points I made, and I began to, that feeling began to dissipate. And then I began to think about the other people that were playing the game, and, you know, maybe what they thought of my getting 63 points and winning the game. So it is a temporary thing, and I eventually, then I just said, you need to delete this, Barbara. You just need to delete this because it doesn't mean anything, really, you know? So that was my little thing of, you know, holding on to it and then realizing that it didn't really have, it wasn't, it's like, who cares? It's not all that important. And I deleted it. But boy, I held on to that puppy for a while, you know?
You can hold on to things for 40 years. Mm-hmm. I mean, I can think of a disappointment that happened 40 years ago that is as fresh in my mind today as it was 40 years ago.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Curious.
And I thought the other day, you know what, Faye, it has been totally meaningless in your life for 40 years. Why do you still think about it? It's so funny.
Yeah, it's difficult to see those things when they pop in as, friendly and useful. But they might be. You know, it might be because it's sharp enough that at least it gets our attention.
Right.
Painful enough that we got poked, so maybe that's the signal to come back, which is the other part of fresh start. You know, it even has a duration.
Dang, that's what I was going to talk about.
Now you can. Now you can.
Over the holidays, Bill's daughter, all of our grandkids have done sun camp. Well, except for the one who's not quite old enough yet. And they have a slogan there, if you lose your mind, come back.
Yeah, that's a good one.
And she gave all of the kids a framed picture of that. So we have this picture of five grandkids holding up their, if you lose your mind, come back. It's on the back of their t-shirt. But as you're talking, I'm thinking about Fresh Start being very similar to that, because, you know, especially once we practice a while, we actually can come back, and that's the same as a fresh start. I mean, we may get lost for a while, but something will bring us back, and we automatically have a fresh start. I just thought of that because it's such a strong slogan for them. Because they're up there losing their minds all the time.
Sure. Just like us.
Unlike
I think with what Richard was saying, I feel that when it is fresh start, it's never going to be the same as it was. So even something good can seem so, practice can seem so open, and I get so high on that my practice was so, it just happened to me yesterday because I sat when I didn't want to sit, and it turned out so great because everything in me was saying to just get up and do, like, dive into my habitual patterns, and I sat, and it felt so great, and I felt so good from that, like, but that ruined it, like, because I just wanted to keep feeling so good from
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
I turned it into this sure. negative thing, and then the whole thing was just make it fresh again.
Yeah.
Like, quit putting good and bad on whatever it is.
Yeah.
You can never, and so when you feel really happy, when something feels really good, it's when something feels fresh and genuine, you can't ever have that exact same fresh, genuine experience again. Mm-hmm. Because it will be fresh and new in whatever, however it manifests.
Yeah, there's even an instruction that's connected to Fresh Start, you know, how to actually do it, which is to, you know, to rearrange the posture. When you notice that you're distracted, you know, you can think, okay, you know, this is going nowhere, I've been zoning out for 20 minutes or whatever, but you can start by placing, you know, going through the whole six steps of seat and legs and arms and all the rest of it. And the context in which I think I first heard this mentioned that you could do this every 3 minutes. So you could do it a lot. You could do it, and pretty much whenever it occurs, I guess you would want to cultivate some stillness also, so the 3 minutes gives you time to sit there and get hot or squirm or whatever a little bit. But yeah, and that's the warriorship of it, is that we're setting sail with no particular expectation of what might be happening next. It's completely fresh, even to the point of being unknown. And fortunately, we have certain kinds of reference points, like, you know, remembering that one could get 63 points. And once it could, it has happened. And, you know, it's like, you know, having one's favorite dinner. You think, oh, good, I'd like to have this. And it isn't quite the same, but we get that. And being able to come again to a center like this and feel the practice that has gone here, and to see my old friends and old new friends and new old friends, this is different. It's different. It's not the same as it was.
I was reading somewhere recently with Fresh Start too. It's not the getting back to the breath. It's different than that.
Yeah, it happens before that.
Right. So could you talk just a little?
Well, I would rather hear what you have to say about it. When does it occur, for example?
I think when, like you were saying, when you start zoning out and you realize that your mind has gone to California or San Francisco or somewhere. For me, it's just sort of remembering where I am, that I'm actually here practicing, and then going back to
it. Yep.
So I think that's for me what it is. It's having a moment to, oh yeah, this is what I'm doing.
I think you're touching on an important thing there, because, like, the way we've been phrasing it a lot is you choose to make a fresh start. But for me, it's not a choice. It's like, I am hit by a fresh start.
That's a very good point.
When I'm completely lost, And then, oh, there I was. I didn't even realize that I was lost.
That's right.
And the fresh start comes, right. And there I'm in it. You know?
Very good point. Yeah. Yes, and the technique part of the fresh start happens after that.
Yeah.
And that happens unbidden, but it seems to have something to do with putting ourselves in the situation of doing it. Happens all the time, but now it's been pointed out to us that it happens all the time. And so we start to notice it.
Whatever happens, if you meditate on it and let it go, you have infinite possibilities that could happen.
Fresh start was before
that.
Whether
good or bad, if you let it go and don't think about it, you've got all these possibilities that you've never even thought of.
Yeah, right. And there are specific things. If we feel tangled up, we can rearrange the posture, sort of to, okay, you know, I'm back, so I can, and that's kind of what we're talking about. But it is that little thing is quite an interesting one.
Sometimes I feel that the most when I'm really drowsy. It's like drowsiness. And you shift, you know, and go back to the posture. And then if you're really tired, you know, it just keeps happening. But that fresh start is very distinct in those situations, it seems like. Because my mind is going, you know, is really bogging down. And just for a second, it's all fresh. And then...
Well, it's interesting because it's a physical thing. You know, when you catch yourself, you know, something happens, so you're in some sort of dreamy state, and you're like this. I don't know how far you go down or what is it that, you know, sort of gives you a clue that you're going to fall on your face. So there's something physiologically that happens, you go, shit, you know, and then you, you know, you sit up like that. It's kind of funny to see everybody like in a weak tone or whatever, you know, in varying stages of, there he goes, I wonder, you know, and then you're back up again. But it's something that's, in a way, just kind of happens without thought, and then you're back until you start heading down again.
Yeah.
I had surgery a couple of weeks ago, and I had anesthesia. And it's never happened to me before, but when I came out of the anesthesia, there was a realization I was conscious of. Like I actually knew that I had gone from not conscious to conscious. And I've never had quite that experience before. I, you know, usually just sort of wake up. But this time it wasn't like waking from a sleep, but it's almost like a switch clicked. And I was back from wherever that place was that I wasn't.
It's really like meditation.
Yep.
Yeah, it was fascinating.
I had someone do healing touch for me to bring me back from anesthesia. And that was interesting. I thought, oh, there's somebody at my feet, you know? Somebody's doing something at my feet. And then there was this sort of click, you know, oh, I'm back. And I think that's some of what healing touch does, is it just sort of brings you back into your body.
From where?
From where I'm at. It's kind of really the abyss.
Call me up in dreamland.
I'm curious, actually, thinking about fresh start and in a way relating it to part of the Sakyam's talk on Sunday, where he talked about if you think you know, or you know something, then actually, to me, that seems like that's a blockage to the fresh start of a conversation with somebody, for instance. Just actually seeing them. And so it feels like fresh start has... I mean, it's not just related to the cushion, because you could wake up from being sort of fixed in your view of someone and suddenly see them fresh.
Yeah. Practice. It takes practice. Sometimes we're better at it than others. You know, so that's the again, part of, you know, sort of the technical aspects of getting onto the cushion is the biggest and hardest thing to do, is actually getting onto the cushion. And once there, you know, then even if we follow one breath, it sometimes can afford some of that freshness, even once. Sometimes helpful to count. This room has other counters in it, and that is part of the available meditation techniques, is to count the breath. Doesn't take but about 3 minutes to do 21, for example, speaking of 3 minutes.
I like to do it backwards.
You do it backwards?
From 108, and I go backwards.
Heavy lifting.
Well, it's sort of like Barbara's thing, when you finally actually can get to the end without having gotten lost and distracted or whatever. It's a
right. So much for that.
I do a little thing like the, in the gap between the, where is it? Right when I finish breathing out, I'll tap myself sometimes, just once, and then do that again. And I actually stay pretty present until I, you know, drift into something else, but I do a little thing where I tap my, or scratch myself, you know, just go, hey,
still here.
Right in that gap, because I was taught that there's something about that gap in the breath where it's, you know, you could take a lot of different directions. I want to stay here, so that's one thing that I do. Sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't, but...
I recently had a kind of an interesting experience along the lines of a fresh start, although not quite the same context, where I've been sitting in the mornings in my office for probably 5 years in the same spot, you know, every day, and I didn't realize how familiar that has become and how much that influences sort of the effect of my practice, because I moved into a spare room. My wife invited me to kind of set my cushion over there because I could keep it there regularly and not have to rearrange things. And very blank, bare room, you know, very comfortable setting, but it's just amazing how it's you know, how what a fresh, you know, sort of blank canvas almost it felt like. It's like, wow, you know, this is really, you know, it almost just left me without any thoughts. It was really interesting. I didn't realize how conditioned I was, even in being, trying to be there. I was in the same spot every day, so that was a funny experience.
I just had that too since I moved. I sat in the same spot at my house in Wyoming for 8 years, right in the same spot, and then moving and just changing the, it was just, it's different. And there's definitely part of me that like wanted so bad to be out of that,
right,
that spot.
It's almost a comfortable little saddle cocoon of its own. It feels like sort of slipping into something that you know what the experience is going to be like. It's that's very nice.
Anyone else like to say something? And could be on any subject at all. Wouldn't this was just a part?
I just started reading a book that was, I think it was actually on the Shambhala email list of things to read, and one of them was Thoughts Are Not the Enemy.
That's the title of a book? That's a good title.
And I don't know if any of you have read that book, but it's, I haven't gotten into that much, but the idea is that rather than just always coming back to the breath, when a thought comes up, you pay attention to that thought and you follow that thought as far as it will go. So it can bring some insight into what is going on in your mind, rather than trying to always push everything away.
When you say following it as far as it can go, you mean just that one thought,
mm-hmm.
or but not the ones that then
follow it?
That's
very difficult
to even yes.
to pay attention to one thought.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. It happens pretty quickly. It seems to me that meaning that usually we get a pretty vivid shot of it if we're right there for whatever that thought or emotion might be.
Mm-hmm.
The seduction seems to be then. Commentary follows it, but that isn't what the book that you're talking about is suggesting, right? They're not talking about your comment on the, or one's comment, our comment, because usually that's what I experience when I have some very vivid thought, that then I'm starting thinking about the thought.
You're thinking about the thought. Well,
yeah.
That's the idea, I think, is to think about the thought.
Uh-huh.
It's an interesting book, and the person that wrote the book is doing this technique for years and has been teaching a lot of other people how to do this technique.
Who is this person?
I have the book at home. Uh-huh. The library had the book, so I checked it out, and I just have started it.
Yeah.
So I can't tell you a lot about it, but kind of intrigued me because I always think I'm always thinking that what's wrong with our thoughts, because that's what our brain does, it's always thinking.
Sure.
And it's so difficult to always be pushing thoughts away. And apparently this person has helped people have a lot of insight into their lives. It's been very therapeutic. So I'll finish the book and I can report on more.
Thank you. Thank you.
Oh, yeah.
Book report.
We need somebody from March to
we
do
have our
the
book of the month, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's I never heard that, and I'd be curious to hear more about it.
It was on a Shambhala reading, suggested reading list.
Mm-hmm.
It is certainly true that we're not trying to suppress or push away thoughts. It is certainly true in this technique, as I understand it, that it is the phrase touching it and letting it go, that you, in order to let it go, you would have to touch it. You would have to have some kind of contact with it before you could let it go. But it happens very quickly. So, like, oh, yeah, you know, I've just remembered something that happened 40 years ago, or I have my list of things that I have to get at the supermarket, or whatever it is, you know, from the very ordinary to... But it's distinct and happens very vividly,
mm-hmm.
but briefly.
And insight meditation... or mindfulness, when I teach the mindfulness-based stress reduction,
uh-huh.
You can actually observe the breath, but you can also observe sound or sensation or emotion. Like if an emotion arises, mm-hmm. you could mm-hmm. actually notice the emotion.
Yes.
Or the object of your meditation can actually be thought. So you're just watching the stream. You're not
grabbing
onto it. Mm-hmm.
Well, you might label it in some specific way tradition too, right?
So yes. Yeah, so we might say, so what I observed was I spent all of my life planning, because every thought's a planning thought, like the supermarket shopping list and the what I need to do tomorrow to know a lot about the way your mind, or where your mind spends its time anyway.
Well, in the Shambhala view, possibly in others, there's also the idea that this would be part of the continuum, you know, that there would be this whole magical display of all this stuff going on. And among the things would be total, fresh, unconditional openness, where there would be no obstruction, also connected to not suppressing or blocking things in any way.
So it's sort of like the level 5 technique in a way.
I was going to say, then you start letting things.
Then there's some other levels. When you get to 5, you really aren't using a technique, or you're not staying.
Your gaze goes up, you're paying attention to what's going on around you,
and you're on the spot.
But that's not level 1, It's like down the road.
Well, they're all in the starting point, too. They all are part of that. And so that's the fresh start part of it, is that we can just go right back to the beginning and rearrange ourselves on the cushion and remember what it is we're doing and like that. Mm-hmm. So that it has no condition on it.
Does the thought always, is language the thought, or does the thought occur and then we give it language? Like there's something that happens before we give it language, and that's the thought.
That's the original thought. Yeah, well, they say that, the whole process of naming is preceded by some other kind of wakeful state. Mm-hmm. And the Buddhists call these the 5 skandhas, the aggregates of how we assemble our sense of the world. That, that we, before we've even named the breeze mm-hmm. is blowing. Doesn't have a name, really. So other people call it other mm-hmm. things.
That the sensation of feeling the breeze on her skin is a thought.
It happens really fast. Yeah. At the same time, I can recall using the phrase that there is no other reality that is being pointed to. I'm waiting for that to be more noticeable. Often the interior reality is the one that is holding sway. Mm-hmm. So back again to the starting all over again, which happens regularly, seeming that moment of wakefulness is, Buddha mind for 1/32nd of a second, mm-hmm. or however long. But it's long enough to notice. Well, thanks for your company. Hope to see you all again.
We hope to see you again.
Thanks. Anything? Other announcements?
No, I think we should go around and say our names.
Oh, thank you.
Everybody knows
that. Thank you.
Oh, yeah, we can turn this off.